Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia EV6. Inspire your senses. The fully electric EV6. Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan in with you today in Joe's seat for the day. And I want to go directly now to Lidka. Lidka, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. And how are you, Lidka? Because you had what was potentially a very dangerous and traumatic experience last week.
Yeah, that's very true. I just went for a hack on Monday morning.
And just for, in case there's people out there who are not horsey people, a hack was taking your horse down to the beach.
Ride, for a pleasure ride.
For a pleasure ride.
Yeah.
Where did you do that?
So we went to Wexford to the beach called Oldbourne, and you know, which was highly recommended by people in the horse community. And that's one of not really many beaches that legally you can ride a horse in certain hours of the day.
Okay, so you were entitled to be on that beach on your horse.
Absolutely, yes.
And were you on your own?
No, I was with a friend of mine.
Okay.
So two of us together, we left Kildare at 5:30 a.m. to get there for 7:30 in the morning to just go for a ride. And yeah, it was really enjoyable. We were there for over 2 hours, and most of that ride was absolutely fantastic, except the 34 seconds that, if you ask me that day how long this incident was lasting for, I would tell you it was 5 minutes. But then I realized I had the GoPro switched on, and I realized that it was just 34 seconds.
Okay, so you say you had a GoPro, so you were taping, you had a camera with you. Was it on your helmet? Where was the GoPro?
Yeah, on a helmet, yeah.
And this was just to get tape or get video of you galloping along the beach?
Yeah, absolutely. Just, you know, it's a beautiful place. We are taking videos ever so often, you know, of the ride itself, to just, you know, record and have fond memories of the places we went to.
Okay, but what you actually recorded this day, will we just have a listen to that now and give people...
Get out! Get out! Get out! Hey! Get out! Good. Good boy.
Okay, Lidka, that was... I can hear the terror in your voice. And we actually, just to tell listeners, we edited some of the gaps in that out, so it went on for a little bit longer in the original tape that you sent us. But what was going on there?
Even now, my actually heart is racing a little bit because, yeah, it was very emotional. I don't know, it just, we were just galloping prior to this incident, and we just started to walk, and I started to look around, talking to my friend, and then I realized that between the horses there is a dog, and I just realized that this is one of the, it was some sort of mix between Staffordshire Terrier. But it was much slimmer, which could remain a very dog, very similar to a pit bull, but it wasn't definitely purebred. It was a mix.
Right.
But the dog was just straight away going into attack mode after I shouted the first time for dog to go away.
And when you say attack mode, was it trying to bite the horse?
Yeah, it was jumping up towards my horse's neck, chest. So the horse started to bounce up. It didn't rear up. When I mean rear up, it didn't bring its... the horse didn't go up, all the way up. It was just bouncing. I just think that, you know, the horse was trying to protect me, because otherwise it would rear up. My horse would rear up in this case, but for that day he didn't. He was very calm. And I had a Western saddle as well, which kept me more safe than English saddle would keep an English rider. So
why is that now? Because I'm not familiar with
So the Western saddle, it's a different build of the saddle. It's actually keeping you really well in it. It has the front build up a bit higher, and at the back it has a higher edge, so the rider is much safer, and the probability of having a fall is very low comparing to English jumping or dressage saddles that are the most popular in Ireland.
Right. So luckily you had the right kind of saddle for this scenario. But I mean, you must have been. Oh, we could hear it there. Let's hear it again now that people know what we're talking about.
Oh my God! Get out! Get out! Get out! Hey! Get out! Good. Good boy.
Yeah, the first time I'm saying good in there is after my dog, my horse kicked for the first time the dog into dog's chest. And actually after this kick, the dog was a little bit more furious. Right. And then straight away my horse gave him a second kick, which was straight into his head. And you can hear the dog after 2-3 seconds realizing that it's in pain. And then I can see the jaw being dislocated. So at least the jaw was dislocated in this instance.
Oh, wow. The dog's jaw was dislocated, yeah, by this kick from your horse.
Yeah.
And obviously we're not advocating for any animal to be injured in any scenario at all. But you were looking at a very dangerous scenario there if your horse had reacted in a different way.
Definitely. To be honest, looking back and reflecting back and talking to other people, we were so lucky that none of us fell off on the ground, because one of us could be attacked by the dog. Or, again, a different scenario, if one of us fell off on the ground, the horse in a panic mode could walk over us and we could get injured from our own horses, because horse is a fight and flight animal. They run away from dangerous situation. It's in their instinct, and that's how they react to any dangerous situation. So we were really lucky that actually we could manage. You can see on the video that my friend's horse is a little bit more nervous than mine. So we were lucky that actually if it had to happen, that actually it happened to me. As I said, I had a Western saddle and my horse reacted to it so well. And he reacted to it so well because I own two horses, two dogs. I'm sorry, I'm a little bit stressed after listening to this again. And I own two dogs, and in my yard there are plenty of dogs, which is, you know.
Yeah, so your horses are used to having dogs around their legs.
Absolutely.
And yeah.
So, but
the dog involved here, was there any owner in the vicinity, or could it have just been a stray dog?
I believe that this dog was very well looked after because it has a really nice harness and it looked very well. And to be honest, it looked like a young dog, maybe a year, maximum 2 years old. And I didn't see any owners when we were just passing by through people. We didn't notice that dog anywhere else. And then after the incident, there was a group of people approaching, but it was about a couple hundred meters away. So I am not sure were they owners or not. I wouldn't be saying facts in here. I can only speculate that they perhaps were the owners of the dog.
What did you do after this? So the dog is, as you say, injured and your
runs
horse...
away. The dog is running away, and yes, we for few seconds are considering what to do, me and my friend, and we are deciding to move on our way because, to be honest, first we are a bit in a serious shock about what happened. Secondly, we don't want anymore to put ourselves at risk to be attacked by an injured dog or whatever. We weren't thinking straight, to be honest. I just wanted to go to see my husband who was waiting there in the car park area. And I just didn't feel safe, and I believe my friend didn't feel safe at this point at all.
A very, very, very frightening situation. But as I say, so lucky that you came away from it with your, you know, still on those horses, and that your horses were okay, because I'd imagine a bite from a dog in that scenario could be very dangerous for a horse.
Totally, a horse's career, or it could end up horse's life, because horses' legs are not healing well. If there would be a, if horse's leg would be bitten by dog, a serious bite could do a serious harm. It could basically end horse's life. You could perhaps have to put a horse down.
Yeah.
So it was terrible, terrible.
Would you go back to that beach again?
Alison, I hope I will, but not any soon. I think for now, you know, a lot of things had happened, and this was another incident that really put me off for now from definitely going to Wexford. Especially after seeing some comments online, it looks like this incident of dogs interfering with horses and riders wouldn't be rare. So the only worry we are having in horses community after this video being released, that you know, we could be, the horses could be banned from beaches, which would be so unfair, because if you look into laws in the mainland Europe, actually, horses are allowed on the beaches. And in Ireland, I think there is less than 5 beaches that are allowing horses to be there and for the riders to do hacking on the beaches.
Can I, just on that now, it just totally coincidentally, we have Mary on another line, just in relation to horses on beaches. Lidke, would you hang on there? You might be able to give us a response to this. Mary, good afternoon, Mary.
Hello, Katie. Hi.
Yeah, you have another, I mean, totally unrelated to Lidke's issue and, you know, the dog issue and all that, but you have an issue about people with their horses on beaches.
Yes, the thing is, I live out in Donabate, and horses can actually go down to the beach until, I think it's 11 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. So early enough. And it's a regular event, especially the weekends. You'll see a few horse boxes, and people take their horses down. But my problem is horses fouling on the beach. The thing is, I noticed in Donabate there's a barrier that stops cars from going down to the beach. So there's two pathways. And it's a regular event to see mounds of horse manure on the pathways. So you can imagine, say, on a good day like this, when the horses leave, people are going down with their buggies and that. And I just can't believe that they don't clean up after themselves. And yet people with dogs, there's signs about fouling and fines, and people are very good about cleaning up now. But the horse owners just seem to just, you know, ignore. It's disgusting looking. And especially on a warm day, you can imagine the smell and that. And it's a regular event in Donabate now on the way down to the beaches. As I say, it's just a horse manure just left there.
Yeah, there is that. Yeah. Lidke, is there a code within the horse community that, you know, you clean up after your horse, or no?
No, absolutely not. But I can reassure you that horses' fall is degrading. After 2 years, there is no sign of it. So even if you look at the video, I have actually 2 hours recorded. There is very little of fall, even though there is a couple horse boxes. So I wouldn't say that this is like taking over the beach and it's very difficult to walk through it. Because if you go there and you look yourself, the facts are speaking for themselves. So I get the point that every so often you may approach fall, but it's the same with dogs, poos, they are not picked up from the beaches either. You can even find the humans fall in there, but that's a different story. So I wouldn't see this as a problem, but definitely there is no laws to pick up horses fall, and this is even not possible due to the size of it.
Well, I mean, people would have said that maybe years gone by, but everyone got into the habits of bringing the plastic bags with them and picking up their dog poo, you know, as they go. I think I'm just looking at a picture. Is this? Is this coming from Mary? Yeah, this is Donabate Beach, is it?
Yes,
I have a picture in front of me here of the pathway down onto Donabate Beach.
Yes.
It's of course a beautiful beach, but it is covered in horse manure. And as you say, if you were trying to bring a buggy down there now, you would have some difficulty, yes. I would say, to get a buggy down there without getting it totally covered in horse manure, you know, which...
Katie, I can honestly say, what is, I mean, can you imagine somebody with a small dog, and people have really got much better at cleaning up after their dogs? You can see it. But say a dog does it on the beach. The tide comes in and the tide washes it out. But in Donabate, when the horse does it on the pathway, it just decomposes, or the council come and have to clean them up at some stage. I just can't believe that there's no law saying you have to clean up if your horse fouls on the beach or on the access roads to the beach. I just, and this is a regular thing in Donabate. Anybody would tell you when they will see it, and we, you know.
Yeah, Lidka, is there any circumstances in which it would be considered, you know, wrong to walk away and leave horse manure behind you?
I'm disappointed that this is taking this road. The real purpose of releasing this video was to bring to people attention the fact that dogs that are not kept on the leash are serious risk. It could be Mary's granddaughter walking there and being attacked by this dog. And there are laws for dogs to be kept on the leash. And I would rather focus on this fact, which is my message, than getting into discussion with people that would like to change the laws. I wouldn't be the right person to actually discuss it. So I won't really get involved in this topic.
No, Lidka, and we appreciate that your issue was about this very, very traumatic event where, you know, as you say, things could have gone very, very wrong last week. But I suppose you mentioned then that there's a fear within the horse community that horses could be banned from beaches, you know, in response to, you know, the video you put up and people's concerns around this. But one of the issues around horses on beaches, I presume, is also about fouling of beaches and, you know, children having to, you know, use those beaches afterwards. So, I mean, they're not completely disconnected as stories. Would you not agree?
I do agree, but that's completely different topic that might be covered with the relevant third parties, because I wouldn't be the right person actually to get into discussion with it, because we were totally complying with the laws, with the current laws. Actually, in fact, if you research the topic, Ireland is the only country which has the least places allocated for people's safety, having trails on their horses. And, you know, other countries, the way they manage this, they have special staff that is going and cleaning beaches every single evening. This is not what is in place in Ireland. And perhaps this should be something to be considered for the future that would keep everybody happy, safe and sound.
Yeah, are you saying, Lidka, that really it's not practical to suggest that somebody be getting off their horse to manage poo, and what would you do with it? And, you know, it's not like you can slip it into a small plastic bag and bring it with you.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that elsewhere, how it's managed is that there are, you know, cleaners employed or people employed to deal with it, so
by
to facilitate
council.
By the councils. Yeah. Mary, what about that?
No, Katie, I still think if people are asked to clean up after their dogs, and you're on the same beach with a horse, there is nothing to stop you. Donabate isn't a huge beach, so there's nothing to stop somebody going along with a bucket and a spade and collecting. What difference is there? It's even worse when you think the size of horse poo as compared to dog. I just don't go with that argument. I think you should have the same responsibility as a dog owner.
Are you a dog owner yourself, Mary?
I'm not, no. But, I mean, I just see it every day when I go down to the beach. And people will tell you it's just a regular thing on the pathways down, because it seems to be a pattern with the horses when they're coming up after their exercise. That seems to be the time that they, I don't know why, I don't know if it's nature or what, you know, but I still think horse owners should have the same responsibility as dog owners if they're using the same space that humans are then going down to, you know.
Okay.
You can see that photo. I mean, can you imagine on a warm day with that there in the middle on the path down?
Indeed, yeah. No, it doesn't look pretty. Remember, I'll give you that.
Can
I bring?
The
I want
on the horse. It's usually about 10, 15 kilometers, and you don't even know when your horse is actually falling. So therefore, I think that there is a reason why every law is applying something called reasonable practicable, and there is a meaning behind it, and I'm sure you know about it. So in this case, that's totally not practical. You can actually apply this into practice with horses.
And okay. I have asked people that regularly ride horses, and they say you will know when a horse is having its bowels open, that it tenses up, and that the muscles in the back tenses up. So you know when your horse is actually... What's the word I'm looking for? You know what I mean. You do know when your horse is having its bowels open.
Defecating, I think, is the technical term, Mary. Mary, can we leave that there? Thank you for that. I don't think you'll get agreement from Lidcon on that one. But Lidcon, one of the issues, as you say, your issue was about what happened with it.
And people not complying with the laws that are saying unless you have a full recall of your dog, you shouldn't let it off the leash in a public place. Because this time it happened to me when I was on my horse.
But it could happen.
We were lucky enough to manage the situation. However, I still feel very, very sorry for the dog because it wasn't the dog's fault. It was the owner's fault.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Katrina, can I bring in Katrina? Because we have another related issue that you'll be interested in hearing, I'm sure. And again, it's the same breed or sounds similar breed dog to the one that you were dealing with last week. Katrina, good afternoon.
Hello.
Your puppy was attacked.
Yeah, I was glad to hear Linka raising the issue. My mum actually called me to let me know that you were covering teeth. And we were in a park in Dublin. We'd had the dog off a little puppy. We'd only had him about 2 or 3 weeks. He had been in the dog park, and we went with my two children to have just a bit of lunch at lunchtime. And when we went in, I kind of kept an eye on what the other dogs were in the cafe. It was an outdoor cafe. And our dog was just on leash beside our table having a drink of water. And suddenly there was a shriek and a dog had attacked him. Now, I didn't really know what was going on at the time, but what had happened was there was a dog at the table beside us that was on the lead. And for some reason, the lady let her off the lead. And it was a cross between a Staffordshire and a pit bull, an American pit bull, and it attacked our dog. So it was traumatic for anybody who was there. And I actually heard of somebody telling me the story who didn't know it was my dog, but that there were people in the cafe, children, some people scattered, one person fainted, there was blood everywhere. And there was a fabulous guy called Niall, a fireman from Fibsborough, who just took control of the situation, brought us to a nearby vet. The dog's jaw was broken. And he's had to be kind of sorted with surgery and whatnot. So it was traumatic for anybody who saw it, but anybody who didn't see the follow-up might have thought that the dog had been put down or that dog was dead, but he wasn't. He's fine. Bailey has lived to kind of tell the tale, and he has a shorter, lower jaw, but he's fine.
God, I mean, and your children were there with him when this happened?
Yeah, there was 9 and 11, and it was hard on them because, the older one was really good, actually. He got the lady's number who owned the dog, and he was comforting my younger girl, and then
this is your 11-year-old.
They saw the whole thing unfold. They saw the X-rays. They saw the jaw was broken. They saw him mend. So actually, it probably wasn't as traumatic as for children who were in the cafe who saw it all and happen, and then didn't actually see the follow up. But we contacted. He got the number from the lady. People were very kind. Lots of people offered to bring us to somewhere. And I was there with the two children. And like I say, this man came up. We had met him in the dog park earlier and offered to bring us to a vet who was, again, fantastic and referred us to UCD. Now, the lady, we contacted her. The dog was 12 years old, had never caused any problems, had been off lead before. But I suppose the point that Lidka makes is it's a certain type of breed that there needs to be a muzzle and a 2-metre lead on. And the regulations are there for a reason. And even though the dog may have had 12 years of being very placid and kind of not causing any bother, actually those 60 seconds really caused a lot of damage for a lot of people, not just, the dog obviously got very hurt.
And it was,
people were traumatised.
And it's a matter, as Lidka mentioned, the law earlier, it is a matter of law, isn't it? For that particular breed is on a list of dangerous breeds.
Yeah, they're on a list where they need to be muzzled and on a 2-metre lead. And I know if you've got a dog that's been in your family, and particularly I gather the Staffordshire breed, seem very docile. They can be very friendly. Apparently, they're great family dogs. I didn't recognize it as a pit bull because when I went in, I wouldn't know dogs that well. This is my first dog. But I wouldn't have recognized it as a pit bull. But, they are apparently great. And our vet said that, you know, generally they'll be fine. And most people don't muzzle them. And this lady, in fairness, the owner of the dog, was absolutely shocked and traumatized herself by the whole incident because she had never expected it.
Yeah.
But I suppose it's just for owners of those dogs to be aware, or if anybody ever sees them. Unfortunately, there are regulations, and they're for a very specific reason, because once those dogs lock on, and I saw it myself trying to get our dog away from the jaws, once they lock, it's very hard to get them to let go.
Well,
I can't even remember.
They're bred for that, and there's no getting away from that, really. Okay, I've got more calls coming in, but I would say goodbye to you now for that one, Katrina. Many thanks. Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
And thanks, Leidhke, for raising this.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Ethna, good afternoon, Ethna Ring.
Hi, Katie, how are you?
I'm good. You were listening to Leidhke and Mary there.
I was, and I'd just like to make the point that I would much prefer to step on horse manure than to get dog poo on my shoe. Because, like, dog poo is much more dangerous. Horses are eating grass. So it's not, as we'd say, poisonous. There's not as many pathogens in it as dog poo. And another thing, people put horse manure on their roses in their gardens, and they don't see that as a hazard. You know, they don't gather up dog poo and put that in the roses.
No, we definitely don't do that. But Mary's point was that, I mean, she sent us in a photograph from the path down to Donabate Beach, and it is, like, there is, like, so much horse manure on it. It would be difficult to get down there with a buggy.
Now, I do think if it's on a pathway that people are using, okay, the beach, the tide might take it out, and it breaks down much faster than dog poo as well. But on a beach, on the pathway, I think they should clean up after them when they're finished their run, you know. That, like, I presume horses only poo at certain times. So that you could gauge it, you know, that you could. I mean, I know when my dog is going to poo.
He's regular in his habits, you see, isn't
he? Regular, and I take my bag out if she's on the street and I pick it up, you know?
Yeah.
So, have to be responsible, you know? But
I don't know. Do horses poo at the same time every day?
I don't actually know. I don't know much about horses, but I know that I certainly would be less terrified of handling horse poo than dog poo.
Well, it's a good point, of course. Yeah, it is a different substance, and I don't think people would be quite. But I don't know many people who'd be happy enough to find themselves stepping into horse poo either.
Well, yeah, but it's a hell of a lot easier to clean off as well. You know,
is it?
I think it is because it's the texture. This is
I did not think I'd be spending my afternoon talking about the texture of poo, Ethna, but here we are.
I know, but the reason I know is that I'm an artist and I do bronze casting, and I spend time in a bronze foundry in Normandy, and they actually use horse poo in with the mix of clay because the horse poo breaks down really fast and it allows the air to escape. So the texture actually works like kind of like a fiberglass, but it's just that it's strands, whereas dog poo is tighter. So,
talk about every...
It's a different quality.
Every day is a school day, Ethna. That's fascinating, actually.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, and yeah, the people in the foundry, they shovel fulls of it, they've wheelbarrows of it, and it's gold, you know.
Yeah, our
dog poo wouldn't be in the same category.
It definitely would not be. No, I don't know.
So what I'm saying really is, you know, all jokes aside, that like say, it's when dog poo gets in the grooves of your shoe in the sole of your shoe, it's really difficult to get out. Whereas the horse manure is much easier.
Indeed, I think anyone who's tried to get dog poo out of a child's shoe will attest to that for sure.
Yeah, it's disgusting, whereas you can wipe the horse poo off in the grass and it comes off much easier.
Okay, I'll ring Pat in on this. Pat, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Do you want to put in your tuppence worth here, Pat?
Yeah, Katie, I think after that last speaker that you could devote a whole programme to the benefits of horse poo. The whole thing. But no, listen, we were down on Cullenmore Beach in Strand Hill last week beside the golf course. Lovely, lovely beach that we frequent fairly often. And going down the path onto the beach, our little Jack Russell did a poo, and I immediately picked it up. And right beside me on the path, the people got, was a whole load of this fertilizing horse poo on it. And I think it was disgraceful. Now, there were horses out on the beach. It was low tide. No problems with them out on the beach. I think it's nice to get to let them have their exercise and that on it. But on the pathway going down, like those people were talking about in Dunabate, I think that is disgraceful.
Right. So, yeah. So in a place where the tide isn't going to come and sort stuff out.
It's really, really not on.
What could they do? I mean, you know, as Litka was saying, she wouldn't be aware if what the horse was doing behind them if you were galloping along, and also, it's not practical because it's a lot of poo. So where do you put it?
Yeah, but wait a minute, am I not right in saying some of the horses in Killarney and so forth on it have nappies on them to collect the poo?
That's the Jarvies in Killarney, isn't
it? The Jarvies. And what's the difference between a Jarvie horse nappy and a hacking horse?
Well, is it nappy? Not now? And again, I stand to be corrected. But is the nappy not attached to the trap? You know, the Jarvie itself, the horse.
That I'm not too sure.
That might be the difference there, Pat.
They have saddles. I'm sure they can come up with something. That woman was talking about the lovely.
The Western saddle.
That she had and everything else on it. But no, I've no problems with horses out at low tide exercising. Pretty good. But to have it on the pathway going down to it that people have to go down is absolutely disgraceful.
Okay. Thanks for that, Pat. Thanks for that, Etna.
Listen, don't forget, will you let me know when you're doing that programme on the benefits of horse poo?
Indeed, we will. Thanks, Pat. I go back to the other, I'm more serious, and then go back, and it is very serious, has been very serious for a lot of people, the matter of dog owners and not keeping their dogs on a lead. Billy, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
Yeah, that issue in Katrina, like that scenario that Katrina painted of her little puppy being attacked in an open-air restaurant.
Yeah, now I'm dealing with it from another angle, that I have a son with autism in his 20s. Mm-hmm. And we live in Dublin and we walk in parks, beaches, Howth, and you continuously meet people with dogs off leads. He's quite nervous of dogs and he can react. You know, the typical autism thing, the flapping of the hands and the he gets a bit excited.
Yeah.
And you can ask people, could you put your dog in the lead, please? Sometimes people comply, they're quite polite and no problem. A lot of times you're met with the F off and you should be on the lead, he should be on the lead.
Really?
Who do you think you are telling me to put my dog in the lead?
People say that to you when you ask them to put their dog on a lead?
Yes. I mean, I had an incident in Malahide Castle recently with a lady and she just ignored me. Two big black dogs. Now, there had been no incident, but as we're approaching people, you're conscious that the dogs are lively. You might say, sorry, could you put your dog in a lead or would you hold your dog? No, just ignored it. Now, there was a guy there, one of the park rangers, and I said, excuse me, I said, could you ask this lady? And he asked her, and she ignored him. And he asked her again, and she did. And I said to him, but surely, you know, there's a regulation in the park that dogs must be on the lead. And he said, all we can do is ask. We have no power to control or ask or force it. The dog warden must come and actually catch them with their dog off a lead before it becomes an issue.
Right.
You know, I had the same issue with a lady insists on walking a band dog, one of these pit bull things, off a lead outside the day centre. My son is 10. I've asked her on numerous occasions, and she just ignores me. I've rung the city council, and again, they're very helpful. However, the dog warden must come and catch the person in the act before anything can happen.
And Billy, when your son, you know, if a dog approaches, an energetic dog or a dog off a lead comes close to your son, how does he get very agitated?
Yes, and he may run off.
Oh, that's...
He may just take off down the path. Now, I'm in my 50s and I'm not in the position or condition to run after a 22-year-old running down a path. And he's running blind at this stage, if you know what I mean. He's
like he could run into traffic or anything.
Thank God he hasn't, but we tend to go places where you're not, you know, in that type of environment, that it's normally a park or enough, no traffic around sort of situation. However, he could, in theory, yes, he could. Or he could run into a fence or a tree or another person or another dog, you know.
And I know, and I can imagine myself in your scenario, and I would be very agitated if I saw a dog approaching in those circumstances off a lead. Would you have maybe been very agitated in asking somebody to put their dog, a dog on a lead, and maybe would have that gotten a bad reaction?
Well, you can approach people and say, "Will you put your dog on the lead, please?" and they'll do it, or they'll say.
So you're saying you were always polite?
Possibly not always, because sometimes you're agitated about the whole situation. But Katie, at the end of the day, the dog shouldn't be off the lead in a public place. Most parks in Dublin, dogs are meant to be on the lead. And on the street, your dog is meant to be on the lead, or under effective control, which means you say stop and the dog stops. Oh, sure, he wouldn't touch you. Oh, he's a lovely dog.
Oh, yeah. We had a caller on this programme a little while back referring to people as the sure you wouldn't touch you gang.
Yeah, the arrogance. Yeah. Absolute arrogance. I don't like your dog. I don't want your dog near me. You may think he's the loveliest dog in the world, but I don't want him. He's your dog, so you control him. Now, you're going to get the dog lobby on now. You're going to have millions of calls about dogs on leads, et cetera, et cetera.
But as you say...
But it is the regulation. And it's there for a reason. And it's there for people's safety as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're entitled to be able to go for a walk with your son and not have to worry about that.
Correct.
Billy...
And maybe people listening might take a little heed of this and... think about that when they lift their dog off a lead in future.
Yeah, absolutely. Billy, thanks for that. 1850 715 815.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And I want to move on now because school is back or about to come back after the long summer. But a lot of parents are left in limbo, we are hearing. I want to bring in Orla. Orla Reck, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon, Katie.
Yeah, we're talking to Billy there about his 22-year-old son who had autism. Your daughter is also has autism.
Yeah, my daughter is 14 and she's on the spectrum. And you said earlier on there every day is a school day. Well, it's not going to be a school day for a lot of children who need an escort or a school bus to school. A lot of children on the spectrum aren't going to have a school day tomorrow because they have no way of getting to school, including my daughter.
Okay, we'll go back. So your daughter obviously has been in school since she was five.
Yeah.
And how does she get to school normally?
She gets a bus from the house to her school, and there is an escort on that bus who helps her with any needs that she may have while she's on the bus.
And would she need that escort to make that journey?
9 times out of 10, no. But there'd be the odd day then that would be maybe behaviour that would be dangerous, and she would need some help. So it's in the interest of everybody on the bus, that not just her, the other kids as well, that there's an escort on the bus.
Okay, so now what are you hearing about what's going to happen tomorrow?
So I emailed school on Wednesday and I asked, were things progressing back with the normal transport arrangements? And I was told that they had heard nothing from Bus Éireann. And so I contacted the bus provider and they said that Bus Éireann thought it okay to email them on Wednesday to say some buses were on. They gave their go-ahead for the bus and that the bus was on. But unfortunately, there is no escort, so there will be no transport for her for a few weeks now.
Okay, and whose job is it to sort out the escort?
The school's.
And what are the schools saying?
All I know is it's been passed from one to the other, one saying the bus company, one saying the escort. And I know it's the responsibility of the school to provide an escort, and the escort had an operation, so now there's no escort. So now we cycle to school for 2 or 3 weeks or whatever length of time it takes to get an escort. But, you know, Katie, my actual issue is, right, I'm 14 years fighting this case. I'm 14 years with people not actually doing their jobs. Do your job. Bus Éireann, do your job. Contact the schools on the 1st of August to tell them what people are getting transport, what approval is there. Contact the bus companies on the 1st of August to say, there's your approval, you now have that contract. €63,000 was spent every day in Dublin busing children from one area to the next to get us to school in autism units. €63,000 a day. And no one is going to be responsible for the fact that we don't have an escort tomorrow. No one.
And is there other children in the same situation, Orla?
I see it on social media that there is.
I mean, your daughter, it's Jo, isn't it? Johanna?
Johanna, yeah.
How is she?
How is she? Well, she has had 13 weeks at home since the 29th of May. We're now on the 27th of August, tomorrow. I have brought her to every museum that I could possibly bring her to. I've done absolutely everything to keep her anxiety down. But there comes a point when a child doesn't want to be with their 50-something mother. They want to be with their friends. She was excited and anticipated going back to school. She was happy, looking forward, and I need to put a schedule in place to say, OK, Johanna, we're getting up first thing in the morning. We need to be up bright and early. We're getting on the bus. We're going to school. We'll be in for a few hours, and you'll come home, and then it's a full day Monday. But I can't say that now. Now I have to change and say, OK, we're going to cycle to try and reduce your anxiety so that you're not tense over the change in schedule that we had planned. And I don't mind doing that, but where is the accountability for the 63,000 that is paid to bus companies by this state, by taxpayers of this state? Where's the accountability for that? Where's the accountability for, it's OK for the schools to say, no, I won't hold a summer camp this summer. No, we don't care if your daughter has 13 weeks on her own. We don't care if her anxiety rises.
And was that an issue as well, Orla, that the camps?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the child is anxious because she is lonely. You know, people just...
But I mean, do we have to, just to be fair to everyone now, you know, we are living in a COVID world. So was that part of the fact that there hasn't been camps and there hasn't been the kind of activities you might normally have?
No, I attended loads of camps, fantastic camps this summer. Down water sports camps in Dunleary. I've attended wonderful camps. People are using COVID as an excuse. Do your job. Do your job, Bus Éireann. Do your job, Department of Education. You're well paid for it. Do your job. Do your responsibility to children with a disability. And don't turn around to the parents the first week in September and say, oh, the anxiety is a bit high, the behaviour is a bit bad, can you collect early? No, do your job.
Orla, will you stay there? Because I've got another... I want to go to Kira. Kira, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie, how are you?
You've two children, Kira.
I do, and this year I think we're going to be in the same situation as Orla, although it's our first year to it now. I have a six-year-old who has autism and an intellectual disability, and he's due to be starting in a new school next week, in a special school. And now we've been told his transport most likely isn't going to be ready.
When did you hear this, Kira?
From other parents in the school, they've been told that their transport is going ahead. So that's when I started looking into it, and it seems like our application hasn't been processed yet, but I can't get through to Bus Éireann on the phone, on emails, I'm getting no response. I've had family members on as well, and there's nothing coming back from them.
And how far away from the school are you?
I am about 9 kilometres away, but where we live, like in peak time traffic, that's going to be over an hour for me to travel.
Right.
If I can even bring him myself, because we've other children to get to school as well. And like I am supposed to be working when the kids get dropped off. So I have to see if I can get time off work now to bring my other child to school.
Right. Yeah. In terms of Orla's daughter, Joanna was would have an escort on the bus. Would that be the same similar scenario that you would need to have in place?
Absolutely. So Keane has no understanding of what he's walking into next week, where he's going. Because of COVID, he didn't get to visit his school. He doesn't know anything. So he will 100% need an escort. But I don't think that that's an issue on our end. I think the escorts are there by the school. It's just the application from Bus Éireann isn't coming through, like to say that he has the transport. We have been told that he's granted the transport, but it's just the bus ticket and the paperwork that hasn't been processed.
And how long have you been trying to sort this out?
Well, we applied back in January and I got an email in June from Bus Éireann to say, yes, he will be getting it. But I haven't had nothing from them since.
That is just really, really poor scenario.
Is the exact same scenario across the country. 2 months when the child started secondary school, even though she had transport in primary school, 2 months trying to get a child onto a bus. 2 months. Like, do your job. Do your well-paid jobs. Why can this not be sorted previously? That lady applied in January.
Like, the school that Keane is going to, he receives services in as well. So he will get speech and language, OT. Because he can't go to school now, he'll be missing services as well as the school. And it's our respite from Keane. So the whole family suffer.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's probably quite a high anxiety time anyway for the family with Keane facing into this big change for him.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know, is anyone out there from Bus Éireann that can give us a sense of what's going on and why are you being left hanging like this? Because it seems to me very... it's a terrible situation to land families in at this stage of the year.
Katie, at this particular juncture, right, there needs to be financial consequences for this. Fine, a bus escort, a bus doesn't turn up of a day. Who has been financially penalised? Who's been penalised? If a school chooses not to have this in order, who has been penalised? Will the Department of Education man up, woman up, and say, right, you're not providing for these children, there is a penalty? This is a republic, and we are taxpayers. Where is the penalty? We allegedly have respites in August. I have missed 4 respites. 4 times people text an hour beforehand, no, can't make a stay. They're being paid by the HSE to provide this. No, no consequence. Where is the consequence? Where is the financial penalty? Because unfortunately, from our leaders down there, is absolutely no accountability in this country. It is a disgrace.
Okay, well, you know, we won't tarnish everyone at every level with this, but I can hear the anger in your voice there, and you're entitled to be angry there, Orla, because you need answers on that. And you too, Ciara. We'll see if we get anything else in on this, but we have to take that break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And you're welcome back. And I know that Joe has been talking about various incidents down in the Glen of Amal over the years, going back to the 1940s, and more recently, a horrific explosion down there in the Glen of Amal in Wicklow, which claimed the lives of 3 young boys in 1979. I want to bring in Ger Keenan. Ger, good afternoon.
Oh, hi, Katie.
Yeah, Ger, you were camping that weekend down there.
Yeah, we were.
Take us back to it.
Okay. Well, we were members of the Irish Caravan and Camping Club, and so you know, most weekends from about Easter onwards every year, the club would pick certain places to go. So that particular weekend, we were actually there was a group of us down there. We always called it Seskin, so. We were camping in the grounds of a small school. Okay. And I said Seskin was probably, you know, the townland name. You know, the whole area was called Seskin.
Yeah.
But, so, yeah, we were there that weekend. I can't remember exactly how many families were there. But, you know, there could have been 10, maybe.
And what was the first that you realised that something had happened?
Okay, so I was only 12. So, the memory now mightn't be the best. The first we heard really was, as far as I remember, one of the men who, were in the caravan club was in the pub. There was a tiny pub up the road from where we were camping. So somehow or other, a member of the group, the youth club, had managed to get to the main road and signalled down a car for help. The car then, whoever was in the car drove up the road and kind of, I stopped off at the pub. And that's how the word got out, as far as I remember, Katie. Now, look, that's my memory of it.
I suppose we should just remind people, in case they weren't tuned in when Joe mentioned this earlier. This was 12 members of a youth club from Lucan in Dublin who had been walking in the Glen of Amal. They came across, one of them came across some unexploded ammunition. And it was thrown against a rock and it exploded. And three children from that youth club were killed. And I just have the names here, and we should say, out of respect, of course, for those families, Declan Kane, aged 13, Derek Finn, aged 13, and Victor Mills, aged 12, all from Sarsfield Park in Lucan, lost their lives in that just terrible, terrible tragedy.
And so many others were injured.
Yes.
Seriously injured too.
Nine others very seriously injured in that explosion.
Yeah.
I must have been absolute carnage, and the scene there must have been something else.
Well, when the word got to everybody, my dad and then a few of the other men from, say, the caravan club, and many others, I suppose, from the pub maybe went down as well, but they went down. Where it happened, you see, Katie, I don't know how far in off the road that the explosion actually happened, but you walked down an old country road, small country road. There was a bridge with a river underneath it. And as far as I remember, the access was just at that bridge. So I don't know how far in, from there that they had to walk. But they made their way down anyway. And then, the next thing was, there was the military, the soldiers arrived. Then the ambulances arrived. Myself and my friends just sat on a wall watching all of this. Of course, we weren't allowed near the place. We weren't allowed to move down the road at all.
It's probably just as well,
really. Off.
Yeah.
Oh, well, nobody was allowed near it anyway.
Yeah.
But we just lost count of the amount of ambulances and then soldiers and, military vehicles as well, I suppose, all that kind of thing. But all I remember is it was hours and hours before my dad and, say, the other men came back.
Yeah. I'm just, as you're there, Ger, I'm reading a press cutting from that time, from April 15th, 1979. And it's telling me that ambulances and nursing staff from Naas, Baltinglass and Athy carried the injured on stretchers half a mile to the nearest narrow road, at one stage having to wade across a stream. And talking about young people having horrific wounds being stretchered away.
Well, yeah, that probably sounds about right. And my dad never mentioned it, or at least it was never part of a conversation that he'd drop every now and then. He was the shock of what he had actually seen and experienced, unless he may have talked to all, other adults and older friends about it now, but certainly, the family itself throughout, for the years, we never heard it mentioned again. And I never mentioned it to him because I didn't want it to be an obsessing kind of reminder, that way.
Yeah. And I suppose what's astonishing looking back is that the children or the public in general had access to this place where we know that, the army used for training.
Well, yeah. As far as I know, after that, after that explosion that time, the whole place was closed off to the public. Now, I could be wrong, but as far as I know, after that,
there was a big inquiry indeed.
Yeah, yeah. But no, certainly, look, my memory is that, you know, we were able to go onto that land and walk around and play like we were youngsters.
And did you ever come across anything?
Well, yeah, we did. And I kind of... I don't really want to say it just to make light of, you know, anything in case any of the families of these people are listening or anything. No, we did. One day we came across... All I remember was it was blue. And it, look, it was probably was a used, you know, bomb. If I say bomb, it's probably the wrong word
shell.
To use, Katie.
Shells, I think, is what they were talking about down there.
A what, sorry?
Shells, unexploded shells.
Shell. Probably was, this was probably a used shell, I'd say. But no, we picked it up. There was a group of us and we were throwing it to one another, you know, playing donkey. Do you know that game? If you drop it, then you have to spell out donkey. Yeah, yeah. But then as it happened, there was an older teenager with us that day and he just said, look, put that down. So we did. Generally, look, being in the caravan and camping club, no matter where we went, yeah, we were always told, you know, be careful, don't do this, do that, you know, this kind of thing. So, you know, we were allowed to go off on our own in groups and that, but, you know, we knew the basic safety, you know, issues to look out for in any place that we went to. But certainly down there in the Glen of Amal, we knew not to go onto that land when we could hear the, say, the army practicing at the firing range. You know, you'd hear the shots, and that's when we knew not to go. Nobody would go onto the land then. But other than that, you know, as far as I remember, it was kind of a free-for-all.
Well, I just see again, just looking through this story in front of me from that newspaper report back then, an army spokesman said that the shell had obviously been carried and that they later took possession of another live shell which had been found by the children.
Which is
really shocking.
Yeah.
An extraordinary, extraordinary story. And as you say, a lot of people, not just the families of those three young lads who died that day, but so many people, that would have had a huge impact on their lives. I see lots of people talking about at least one youth had a leg amputated, others sustained multiple injuries. It was it was a huge, hugely traumatic event.
Yeah, it was, Katie. And I have to say, since then, you know, like I've often wondered how all of those kids and their families and the you know, the youth leaders who were with them, how they've all been all through the years. And like that, I don't remember ever hearing it being spoken about afterwards, you know.
Yeah.
By the you know, it was reported, say, on the television or whatever. I do know... I think, as far as I remember, my dad was interviewed like all the other people would have been. But he wasn't one to brag. And I remember he said he didn't want the name or obviously the house or home address mentioned, you know, that way. Mm-hmm. He was just totally shocked by it, you know, and upsetting shocked. You know, these kids, they were my age and...
Yeah, I imagine he saw things he wished he'd never seen. I mean, that's...
That's definitely the case.
Yeah,
absolutely. He wasn't a drinker, but I know that evening when they all came back, he did actually have a glass of either brandy or whiskey, maybe two or three glasses. I don't know, but I mean, it's just very hard to imagine what they came across, you know. And I don't know if, say, my dad and that group were there first or... who got to them first, but, you know, they were certainly there in the middle of it all anyway.
Yeah, and so things, as I say, they wish they'd never seen. Ger, thank you for joining us with that and bringing us those memories. And it's good, to, you know, we should just say that we are thinking about all those families that were caught up in that all those years ago.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Now I want to go back to that topic we were discussing there a little earlier. Jane, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
Good, Jane. You were listening to Orla and Kira talking about their struggles to try and sort out school transport for their children with special needs this year.
I was, Katie, and, you know, I just kind of felt compelled to ring in, I suppose, first of all, to support them. I'm a mum and a carer myself. We're actually on the other end, I suppose, of the education system. I have two boys with intellectual disabilities and autism. My eldest son is 21. He's now in a day service. And my younger son, Daniel, is 17. So he's just about to go into his last year in school. And, you know, I suppose the point I really wanted to make or a couple of points I wanted to make very quickly to you, Katie, is, you know, haven't I suppose gone through a lifetime up to 21 years, we've hopefully a long time ahead of us as well, but we've gone through the process of diagnosis, the process of intervention, early intervention, preschool, home tuition, special schools, special units, therapy, transport. All of these things are really vital children with special needs and to adults with special needs, but for their parents it's a constant struggle throughout their lifetime. And you know, I'm sorry to say that it doesn't end when education ends, it starts all over again. It's like our children fall out of some cloud in the sky, even though they've been within and engaging with systems from a very, very early age, if not from birth. So I really think the people that run our country and the people who are in charge of the departments responsible for children and adults with intellectual disabilities and physical disabilities really need to take a lifespan look approach at a person's lifespan, rather than you fight for this at preschool age, you have to fight for this at diagnosis age, you have to fight for the other thing at adult. And it's very, very wearing, Katie. It's very difficult on the children. It's very difficult on their families. I know, I suppose, better than most what it's like. I mean, obviously, the restrictions and the lockdowns have been terribly hard on everybody. But for carers and for people who have looked after some of our most vulnerable citizens, our children and our adults with intellectual disability, and really had to do that with the doors closed behind us in March 2020. And look, thankfully, services are back up and running now, but it was a very, very, very difficult, unbelievably difficult time for us. And I'm just very sad, I suppose, Katie, to switch on the radio today and to hear those two women, you know, having been through, I'd have an idea of the measure of what they've been through those restrictions as well.
Yeah.
And now to finally, maybe there's a light, maybe we can come back to some normality. Well, it's different for them because they now have to fight for something as basic as being able to get their child in and out of school. And things like going to school are so important to both children and so important to their families. Those children really understand the world by routine and structure, and they've been without that for so long. And their parents and their families have supported them through that. And I just think the arms of the state need to support those families now.
And Jane, and your own situation, Jane, you're, as you say, you're coming out the other end of the education cycle. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, it goes on. It's not going to your children don't get better once they're
No, absolutely.
You're on your own, are you?
I'm on my own, yeah. My husband passed away very suddenly. Actually, I spoke to Joe, I think a few months after my husband, Rod, had passed away. But yeah, he passed away very suddenly almost 7 years ago. Katie,
I'm just working back the maths there. And so that would have been your oldest son would have been 14?
He would have been 14. My younger son, Daniel, would have been 10. Our daughter, Kira, was only 16 at the time. That was something we looked at. I thought, God, can we possibly survive this? But, you know, I put everything I had, I suppose, into us surviving it, and we did. I suppose when COVID came along, it was kind of, we were really only starting to find our feet, and then we were back to square one. But we got through that as well, you know. And look, at my story isn't unique. Every family you could speak to, who is caring for somebody with an intellectual disability, whether it be they are an adult or a child, Katie, you know, will have a similar story. I mean, you know, I suppose maybe losing your partner, I was only 44 myself, is quite unusual. It's quite rare, thank goodness. And I certainly wouldn't want people worrying that it could happen to them. It is quite rare. But do you know what? Life is unpredictable, and you never know what it's going to throw at you. And all you can do is do your best. And hand in heart, I can say I've done my best for my family. And I can say the same for the 500,000 family carers there are in Ireland. But the state needs to do their best for family carers as well and for the people that they look after.
Absolutely, Jane. And you make such a great case, and you are an incredible woman to take the time out again today again to support those other families when you heard the situation they were in. How you get the energy and how you get out of bed every day and face into it and battle away. I salute you. That's all I can say.
Well, thanks, Katie. And you know what? I suppose the incredible people are the people like my sons, because look at. I can make a phone call and speak to you on the radio, and, you know, I can send emails, you know, I can talk to people, I can, you know, I can look after myself. People like Evan can't do that, but yet he functions in the world. So, you know, I suppose if it comes to anybody being incredible, it would be them. You know, we're just kind of cheerleading behind them, but maybe the state needs to cheerlead behind us all as well.
Okay, well said, Jane. Many, many thanks for joining us with that. We'll see what happens with those families and with those school transport stories. Just to let you know, I know there was a lot of reports that there had been fears of Kabul airport being targeted. We're now hearing that there has been an explosion outside Kabul airport. We're not clear yet what casualties are there. That's from officials telling the Reuters news agency. So I'm sure our newsroom will be bringing you up to date news on that as the afternoon goes on. Such a horrific situation out there developing by the day. But that's all we have time for. I do. Our BCO today was Daniel Keating. Liam Mullen was on sound. Research was by Richie Byrne. Angus McNally produced. And stand by now for Ray Darcy.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia EV6. Inspire your senses. The fully electric EV6. For more, visit kia.com.
1850 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.